And my special guest for the week has arrived, Diane Kimpton, who is a children's author. Good afternoon, Diane.
Hello.
Yeah. You're a children's author, so presumably that means you've published loads and loads of books. Can you tell us about maybe one or two of them, some titles that people might be familiar with?
There's over 40 altogether. And the ones I'm probably best known for are a series for little girls called The Pony Man Princess. There's 13 in the series altogether. But I've gone on writing about horses, and the other book that people really like is one called There Must Be Horses, which is for an older age group. It was written for the children who'd grown out of The Pony Man Princess. And it took a long time to come up with, but it's a book about a very troubled foster child who goes to a home where there are horses, and she desperately wants to stay there because of the horses, but they won't keep her. So the book is about her trying to persuade the foster parents to take her permanently.
Yeah.
And at the same time, her growing relationship with an equally troubled horse.
Right. And how long ago did you write that one?
I wrote that one a couple of years ago.
Okay.
I've been a bit swamped with home teaching my granddaughter in the last year, so I haven't written as much. But I have written a book about a green sheep.
A green sheep.
Yeah.
Right.
He is an alien who's come down to Earth to observe and accidentally disguised himself as a green sheep who bars blackwoods and duplicates himself every time he goes to sleep.
Good Lord.
Which is a very complicated story to try and describe.
Where on Earth did that idea come from? Have you any idea?
It grew from wanting to do a mathematical book.
Right.
And there is an old, I'm not sure if it's an Indian legend or a Chinese legend, about an emperor who demanded that he should be given enough rice to cover a chessboard with one grain on the first square, two on the second, four and third.
Oh, I see.
By the time you get to the last square, it's all the rice in the world. Because the numbers get so big so quickly.
Ah, wow. That's clever. And how long have you been writing, Diane?
About 25 years.
Okay. And how did you start? Presume you've been at work and you've been raising a family. Was it a sort of a break in work or family or both?
Well, it was the break in work that was caused by the family, really. I'd always liked making up stories and always sort of had a vague fancy to write. But I became a maths teacher. Because I didn't think writing was a viable career, because all the writers I met at school, people we read at school were already dead, and it looked like that was a requirement. So I didn't write. I went and trained as a maths teacher. Then I left work to have my children and decided I actually preferred that. And I didn't really want to go back to teaching. I thought now's the time to try the writing.
Okay.
And my husband very nicely tolerated me doing it.
Okay.
It's not the way to earn your fortune.
Okay. And where was this, Diane? Are you an Ireland person?
I'm not Ireland born and bred, but I came here when I was 21.
Okay.
No, 22, when I got married.
And where were you born and raised?
South London, near Croydon.
Okay, yeah. So what brought you to the Isle of Wight?
BHC, which is now GKN.
Oh, right.
Because my husband, who is also not Ireland born and bred, was doing a thick sandwich course with British Hovercraft when I met him. When we got married, he still had the final year to go, which is the final year in industry. So we came here and we've never gone back.
No. Is it tough to actually make a go of it as a children's writer? I mean, like all branches of life these days, things are very competitive, aren't they? But yeah, you're managing to turn out quite a few, so it suggests that you're doing rather well. Is that the case?
It is difficult. It's very difficult to get into any sort of writing now if you want to go the traditional route.
Yeah.
It was much easier when I started. They always used to say, oh, don't self-publish, because if your book is good enough, somebody will pick it up. But that isn't true anymore, because the publishers have been taken over. There's just a few big conglomerates and some tiny ones.
Yeah.
And they like to publish celebrities. So they'd rather buy my books if they were going to publish them with somebody else's name on.
Yeah. Has that been a proposal put to you, that we'll take it as long as you let us put somebody else's name on it?
It wasn't one I offered, but I have certainly been asked to do a celebrity children's book.
Yeah. That's interesting. So celebrity sells.
Celebrity's easy to market.
Yeah. Okay. So now you just self-publish your own books?
The last couple of books I've self-published, and it's been so much fun. And it's lovely being in control. And, you know, There Must Be Horses has... You don't sell in anything like the numbers that you would sell if you were trade publishing, but you get a lot more money per book.
Yeah.
And I've sold the rights to... It's coming out in Denmark. It's coming out in Germany. I actually had an auction between publishers to buy it for Germany.
Wow.
So you can do all the things a traditional publisher would do.
Yeah.
But you're in control, which is really nice.
Are you able to do that and have that level of interest because you've got such a strong track record as a published author? Or do you think someone starting up today could actually reproduce that?
Having the track record helps. I don't think there's any doubt in that. But there are people who start up and... they do well. And what you have to do is write an absolutely stonking book. If the book is good enough, so that people recommend it. I once had a marketing guy in publishing say to me that the only thing that really sells books is word of mouth recommendation.
All right.
So it's got to be good enough that when people get to the end of it and they've got to really like that end, you can ruin the book with a bad end. Yeah. If they really like the end, then they say to somebody else, hey, you really want to read this book.
Okay.
It's how Harry Potter started. It didn't have great marketing to start with.
No. And that book was rejected several times, I believe, wasn't it?
And it was finally accepted by Bloomsbury, who at the time were small. They're not now, because they did Harry Potter, but they were small at the time.
And did you have problems initially finding a publisher for your work, or were you were you sort of snapped up straight away?
No, my first book, which was a book for adults on coping with having a sick or disabled child in the family, that I sold to, I'm not sure if it was the 12th or 14th publisher I sent it to.
Oh, wow.
But once you've got one, then I got an agent and she managed to sell others. But it is becoming harder and harder, even to get into the traditional publishing. They're very conservative. You know, before Harry Potter, editors used to say, we can't sell a book about boarding schools. Modern children don't like books on magic.
Yeah.
And suddenly Harry Potter came and everybody wanted books about other books about wizards.
Yeah.
But they didn't do as well because they weren't different. They're very loath to take something that's different. Okay. But different is what is successful.
Yeah, and Green Sheep sounds different, I have to say.
Yes. Yes.
Are you working on a book at the moment?
I'm working on a book on how to write, actually.
How to write.
Yeah, because when I started, my very first novel was rejected with a weak plot and a flat ending, which is a bit devastating, really. But it was. It was. Yeah. Now I look back at it, it was lousy.
Yeah.
And so I had to set out and learn how to plot a story. So I'm writing a book on how to plot a story.
Okay.
To help other people learn how to do it.
And are you going to self-publish that?
Yeah, I'll definitely self-publish that. Okay. And then one day they want... loads of people have asked me to do a sequel to There Must Be Horses, so I might do that one day.
Okay.
And then I've got a series about dragons, which I haven't written yet, and I've got a young adult fantasy about a world without horses, which one day I might write. There's loads of possibilities.
Yeah. Could you share with us your approach to writing? Because it's quite hard work. People think of it as quite a lonely life thing, but how do you convert your idea into a book? Because lots of people will say, everybody says that cliche, everybody's got a book in them. I'm not sure that's actually true, is it?
Well, some people say some of them should stay there, but it's a question of developing an idea into a story. Most of what I write, I've written a lot of non-fiction as well for children and adults, but mainly I'm at the moment writing fiction. So you get that germ of an idea, and for me, I then work out the end.
Right. So you go straight from the basic idea to an end point.
You have to know what you're aiming at. So I wrote a picture book about a character. My grandson couldn't say Doctor Who. He used to say Doctor Hoof. And somebody said to me, oh, that would be a lovely name for a picture book character. So I thought, oh, yeah. And as soon as she said it, I had a picture of a horse who was a doctor with a stethoscope around his neck.
Yeah.
So, but I spent ages and ages working out trying to think of a story for him.
Right.
And I thought, oh, he needs to be, what about a story about not getting on? So he needs to be somewhere he doesn't get on. And obviously at the end of the story, the problem's got to be solved and he's got lots of friends. So you work.
Yeah.
You work from there.
Yeah. And when you do it, I find this interesting, but when you do that, do you just sit in your lonely room and daydream and think of ideas, or do you sit down and write ideas down? How do you go from the idea to the end? Do you just sit and think alone for a while?
I brainstorm ideas.
Yeah.
I go and do something else because sometimes the idea pops into my head. I think about it a lot.
Yeah.
Might take ages. I mean, for the Doctor Who one, I actually woke my husband up at 2 a.m. and said, he lives in a one-horse town, which was the big breakthrough in the story. And I couldn't get anywhere until I'd worked that out. And There Must Be Horses took about 2 years to plot.
Oh, wow.
It took a lot of research because I had to research the fostering side. And I wanted to work in horse whispering and healing troubled horses and things like that. I even ended up buying a horse, which was my excuse really, was that I needed the research, but I just wanted a horse really.
Okay, but you're still bubbling away with lots of ideas for new books and shows. No sign of waning.
No, authors don't retire. They might slow down a bit, but they don't give up.
Good. And one of the other reasons I asked you to call in to see us was because you've done something completely different, haven't you? You have written a pantomime that is going to be on stage in Cowes before very long. Can you tell us all about that?
Yeah, I've always sort of fancied writing a pantomime, and my next-door neighbour happens to direct pantomimes and said she hadn't got a script that she liked. And I said, oh, I could write you one if you like. But I didn't want to do, you know, all the traditions of the Aladdins and Snow Whites and everything have been done so many times that it's difficult to come up with anything original for them. So I thought I'd start with a brand new story.
Yeah.
So it's Santa Claus the Panto, and Beatrix the Bad Fairy has set out to ruin Christmas, and Gloria the Good Fairy and Muriel the Miserable Fairy and Doris the fairly incompetent fairy set out to prevent her doing it.
Yeah, I'm pretending I don't know anything about it, but of course I do because I'm in it.
I know, I'm seeing you.
Oh, yeah, we have been rehearsing it, haven't we?
Yeah.
So where did that idea come from? Was it just because Becky said, I need a script, and you said, right, I'm going to write one, or had you already got something in mind?
What I had was I'd written an alternative version of Sleeping Beauty, where the prince didn't like kissing princesses, which was going to cause a really big issue. And, of course, it was the good fairy's problem. So I wrote the story from the good fairy's point of view, and in the process developed Beatrix and Muriel and Gloria.
Yeah.
And I really liked those fairies, and I tried making them into an animation series and thing, which I couldn't sell. And I thought, oh, I don't know, they're really, really good on stage.
Mm.
So I took those fairies and... Yeah.
So it started with the fairies.
So it started with the fairies.
Yeah.
And also, once I thought, oh, we could do Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Then, of course, naturally, the music is all those really good Christmas songs that everybody likes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. How long did it take you to write it?
Oh, it took me a month or two to write, but about 6 months to plan.
Wow.
Because... The way I said about letting ideas brew in your head. You're not thinking about it constantly. Yeah. Although it did surprise people that in August I was saying to them, what is your favourite Christmas song? Why? So you have to sort of think Christmas at a time that wasn't coming out. In the end, I did actually write it over the last Christmas period and the New Year, which was easier than trying to do it in the summer.
Okay. So... Santa Claus the Panto is on at Trinity Theatre in Cowes.
Yes.
Can you give us all the details of dates and times, Dan?
It's on Friday, December the 4th at 7:30, the 5th at 2:30, which is a Saturday. Then the following Friday, December the 11th at 7:30. There's a matinee on December the 12th at 2:30. And there's a later matinee on December the 13th at 5 o'clock.
Okay. And there is another one on the first Sunday, isn't there?
On the first Sunday, it's exclusively for the Beavers.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, we do what's called the Beaver Matinee.
Ooh.
Which is full of very excited, loud children and great fun.
Yeah, we can't wait for that. Yeah, okay. And has that given you a taste for plays and writing for the stage, would you think?
I think I'd certainly like to do it again. It's always a question of coming up with an idea. I'd like to do a non-panto.
Yeah.
And I've also written some scripts for animation. So I'd done script writing before, but I hadn't done it for the stage, and it's a different...
Yeah.
The different media has different skills attached.
Yeah, you mentioned that before we went on the air about the animation. Can you tell me a bit more about that? That sounds really interesting.
It was fun. I did it for a series called Little Ghosts, which was four little ghosts who lived in a house, in a castle. Yeah. They haunted the castle, and it basically was a way of getting small children without parents telling them what to do.
Yeah.
And it was a lovely series because you could use all sorts of fantastic elements and go really surreal with tomatoes that became giant tomatoes and burst and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
And magic and anything. You could put virtually anything in it that you liked. But there was a team of us, because there were a lot of episodes needed, and I wrote four of them.
Yeah.
And you came up with an idea. Like I said, oh, how about they find a dragon's egg and it hatches out? Oh, great, they said. So I went back the next day and said, so how about they do this and that and that? And they said, oh, no, that won't work. The dragon's legs are too short. I said, pardon? And they've been so excited by the story, they've gone and designed the dragon.
Oh,
so
right.
It is very much a team a team effort.
Yeah.
So then I had to work out a story for a short-legged dragon.
Yeah. How would you describe yourself, Di? Are you... that's almost like obsessed about writing now, that you every waking moment you're thinking of ideas and you're writing stuff down and taking notes, or do you...
It'd be
just
nice if I was
out?
Really. Yeah. Like a lot of authors, I'm very good on displacement activities. You think, oh, now I better write now. Oh, but I haven't done such and such. So I have to force myself to do it. I put a CD on and say, I'm going to sit at this desk until that CD is finished.
And have you got an unfulfilled ambition yet? And when you think about writing, have you got a big blockbusting novel in you? Or is that an area that you might pursue one day?
I can't see me ever doing a big blockbuster. But yeah, I mean, obviously everybody's dream is to have the really, really successful novel. Unfortunately, it always used to be I'd like to win the Smarties Book Prize, which is now called the Something or Other Else Book Prize. Mm. But unfortunately, books aren't eligible for most of these prizes.
Oh, no, they're not, are they?
No.
Do you think you will write a novel? Would you like to?
Do you mean a proper... Are you saying a proper novel?
I'm talking about, adult novel, because I think you said you'd written one for young adults, didn't you?
Well, young adult books are quite interesting. It's a really interesting field, because young adult is the best-selling area of writing.
Yeah.
And it's because adults write them, read them too.
Yeah.
I mean, nearly all the books I read are officially classified as young adult novels.
Oh, okay.
Because they're very fast moving, they have very strong plots, strong characterization, and less rambling description and stuff.
A bit like The Hunger Games.
The Hunger Games is young adult. The Younger Games is young adult. The Knife of Never Letting Go is young adult. Loads of really successful books are young adult.
Yeah, one of the ones I remember got me completely hooked was, I think, Philip Pullman. Was it his Dark Materials? Which is an absolute classic,
I think. They're talking about the BBC making a series of that.
Yes, they are.
Which should be better than the film, hopefully.
I hope so, So it might be your turn one day, Di, with your green sheep.
It would be... I suppose that would be the ambition, to have something made into a film. It would be very, very... exciting to have something made into...
And is that something you could actively pursue, or do you just have to hope that somebody spots you and finds you?
You generally sort of hope that somebody will pick it up. You can sort of send the book off to people who might be interested and sort of try and push things. And there are agents who do it.
Yeah.
And there's loads of self-published authors who have sold farm rights for their books.
Okay. Right then, I've got to let you go, but before we do, just remind us of the dates for Santa Claus the Panto at Trinity Theatre Cowes, and how can people book tickets?
It's December the 4th and 5th, Friday the 4th, Saturday the 5th, Sunday's sold out, and then it's Friday the 11th, Saturday the 12th, and Sunday the 13th, and there's matinees and evening performances. And tickets are selling fast.
Good.
So you can buy them online at kodds.com caods.org.uk.
Is that CAODS?
www.caods.org.uk.
Yeah.
Or you can phone the theatre, which is 295229.
You say that one more time, that phone number?
295229.
Right, you've done a great job as my radio announcer today. I'll let you go now, Diane.
Okay.
Thank you so much for coming in. It's lovely to talk to you.
Thank you for asking me.
Oh, no, thanks for coming. And I'll probably see you at the rehearsals tonight, won't I?
Yeah. Don't forget, it's behind you.
Oh, no.